Morning. Today's daf in Nida is Ayin Aleph. We are starting today on Ayin Aleph Amud Aleph. We are at the two dots. We're going to be beginning with Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel Machloksim between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel on Inyanei Tumah. That's going to be our day today. You look back at the Mishnah. Mishnah takes us back to Samach Tesem Advais 2 days ago. The Mishnah taught us regarding Zav Zav and Nida Yales Mitzora, that they are metame, once they die, they're metame b'masa. And we already discussed that at length exactly what that means, the metame b'masa, after they die, they're dead. After everybody's dead, they're metame. They're metame b'maka v'masa v'ohel. So we already set up shot in the Mishnah over there. And then we went through yesterday the 12 questions that were asked from the Chachmei Alexandria to Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, and he answered all 12 questions. Mm-hmm. And then the Mishnah brought in a machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. The end of the Mishnah, Beis Shammai omrim kol anashim mesos nidos. According to Beis Shammai, so women, when they die, so we assume that they are nida when they're dead. Now, So what does that mean that they are nida? In other words, after they're dead, obviously they're metame b'magav v'masav ohel, but it means that we assume that right before they died, so they were post nida. They started discharging before they died. What does that mean consequently? It means that any clothing that was on their body while before they died, or anything that they came into contact with before they died, is assumed to have been come into contact with a nida. That's the simple pshat of the halacha Beis Shammai. Whereas Beis Hillel says, no, ain't nida ela shemesa nida. Unless we know for sure that she was a nida before she died. So we're not going to be making any assumptions that she was a nida before she died. So we have a machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel over here regarding what is the presumed status of a woman right before she died. And with that, we go right to our Gemara.
Does Beis Shammai make any distinction about age?
No. So what's the difference between what's the machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel? So we go right to our Gemara, where the Gemara begins this morning with what is the difference between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel? So Beis Shammai Amar v'chulei mai tamai de Beis Shammai. So what's the reason behind Beis Shammai? Inem mishum dichtiv v'tischach amalka. So maybe it's based on the following. The pasuk says regarding Esther Amalka, after she was given news by Mordechai, right? The go between Esther and Mordechai, hasach. So anyway, so when she got the bad news, so she was distraught. And the pasuk says in the Megillah, "Vatischalchal hamaka." It's a hard word to translate. I'll say she got distraught, but Amarav Malam Shapir Sanida. So she was so distraught, she was so disturbed by the news that the way Rav understands the pasuk is that she was Parsnida. She started menstruating, and I guess the word Tischalchal from the word Chalulin, which means that she basically opened up. But anyway, she started menstruating. So Hachanami Agav Yisusa de Malacha de Mavsa Chazia Chazia. So the Gemara says, so basically, what do we see? That when a woman is encountered with a sudden fear, so the response to that, the physiological response to that, is that she starts discharging. So we could say that before she died, obviously she's gripped with a fear before death, totally normal. And so therefore, we are going to assume that she is going to start menstruating. This perhaps is going to be an explanation of Beis Shammai. So the Gemara says, let's go back to a mission that we learned earlier in the Masechta. Earlier in the Masechta, we talked about Vestos. And if a woman has a Vest Kavua, so that means to say that when she arrives at her Vest Kavua and she didn't do a Bedika, so she is assumed to be a Nida. Okay, we discussed this already halfway through the Masechta. And what if, let's say, she was gripped with terrible fear? And that's what the Mishnah there describes, Shecharara Misalakis Esadamim. The Mishnah over there earlier said that if a woman is gripped with tremendous fear, so that fear is going to abate the discharge, and not only will she not discharge, but just the opposite. We assume that even if she had a Vest Kavua, she's going to have a cessation of her Nida. And so the Mishnah earlier has told us that a woman acts in the exact opposite direction when it comes to fear. Not that she starts menstruating, but just the opposite, she doesn't menstruate. So halokasha pachta samis biyisusa merafia. So the Gemara makes distinctions between different types of fears. When we're talking about a fear that we discussed earlier, so pachta. So we're talking about a steady dread. So a steady dread, in other words, they remember there were marauders, there was an army that was going through town, and she was in hiding. But that wasn't a instant panic, that was a steady dread. And so for that, samis. So the physiological response is that literally the word samis means shrivel up, meaning that basically the blood is not going to come out. On the other hand, if we're talking about a sudden shock, so that be susa, so merafia. Literally the word means softens her up, meaning it opens her up. And so we can make that kind of distinction between different types of fears. And so we have a pshat for Beis Shammai. So Elah hadnan Beis Shammai omrim kol anashim Kol ha'anashim meisim zavim, beisel ormim ein zav ela meisav. The Gemara says, look, as much as we would like to give this as a pshat in Beis Shammai, the Gemara now points out we know it's not a good pshat in Beis Shammai because the following. Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel are not only arguing about a nida, they're also arguing about a zav as well. A man who died as a zav or a woman who died as a zava. Let's keep it to a man. A man who dies as a zav, so what is the presumed status? Well, if we know he was a zav, so obviously the presumed status is he died as a zav. But what if we don't know? And here again, we have a machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai's position is that every man is going to be treated like a zav when he dies. And Beis Hillel is of the opinion that ein zav ela mishum ein zav. Same thing. That we all, if we know the man is a zav, so then we presume that he died as a zav. But if we don't know, we're not going to automatically assume that he died as a zav. Now, ikrei kan mi besarov ela machmason so. Now, the Gemara says, now, you can't give the same explanation regarding the man and his zav status and that of a woman and her nida status. You can't give the same explanation. Consider, said the Gemara, that we've learned this earlier, that there is a fundamental difference between a woman and a nida and a man and a zav. A woman's a nida, regardless of why she started discharging, regardless of whether it was internally generated or it was caused by some sort of external factor. In fact, we learned earlier that with an external factor, it could very well be that the external factor is going to bring about her discharging. And obviously, that still has the status of a nida. Right? That was the vest haguf that we discussed earlier. Right? She was eating garlic, she was eating onion, etc., etc. So when it comes to a woman and her nida status, so that's true whether it's internally or externally generated. But when it comes to a man and being a zav, a man is only a zav when it's internally generated. If that zav discharge was externally stimulated, so that does not have the status of a zav discharge. And so this explanation that we have so far is not a valid explanation. It's incomplete. Because a man, let's say he's gripped with fear before he dies, and now he has a zav discharge right before he dies because of that fear. That's not zivus. That's not tumas zav, because that was externally generated. So this explanation between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, in terms of why what they're arguing about, it can't be based on, well, the fear is causing her to be an Ida, because that same argument doesn't work regarding a man being a Zav. So at the time of the Beis Shammai Kiddush Tanya, so the Gemara says, okay, so we're going to have to head down another course and another explanation in terms of what is at the core of the debate between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. So Kiddush Tanya, we learned the following Brisa, Rishon Ayu Mat Bilin Kelam Al Gabi Nidos Mesos Vayu Nidos Chayus Mes Baishos. So you, so imagine the following scenario, where a woman is attending a funeral of another woman, and they see, I don't think at the funeral itself, but in other words, around the person's house, if that woman was in Ida before she died, so they're going to now be toveling all the clothing, all the kalim, anything in the house that she was metame, right? The seats, the couches, the beds. So now the woman who's there, who happens to be in Ida at the time, she's thinking to myself, this is so embarrassing. Meaning, this is what's going to happen when I die. They're going to be toveling all of the kalim. And so the women who at the time were a nida, so they felt horrible, they were embarrassed. And so therefore they made the following takana. Hitkinu, shiumat bilin agabe kol anashim imnei kvodam shel nidos, chayos. And so what they did is they made the following takana. And that is, any woman who died, they're going to be toveling all their kalim. That's in the house that they came into contact with. Meaning, so now we're not going to discriminate between the woman who died as a nida versus the woman who did not die as a nida. And so now this is just simply standard procedure, that when somebody died, you just simply tovel all the kalim of their house. She might not have died when she was a nida. Okay, but now at least the people there that are witnessing, so they're not going to be embarrassed. And the women who are currently a nida, witnessing the toveling, so they're not going to be embarrassed because this is now standard procedure. And so the same thing is true regarding a zav. A man who is a zav, and he now sees that after the funeral of one of his friends, so they see that, he died as a zav, and they're starting now to tovel all the kalim, because of course, if you died before you were a zav, so that means that you were a metame, everything in the house. So all the kalim in the house, and all the chairs in the house, and the bed in the house, all require tefillah. And any man who at the time is a zav, so he's going to be embarrassed, right? This is what's going to happen. I'm going to die, and they're going to be toveling all my kalim, and people are going to know. So once again, and so therefore, what they did is they instituted that it be standard practice. Standard practice where anytime somebody dies, they're going to be tovel all their kalim, and so therefore, nobody's going to be suffering the embarrassment as they're looking. That's a great question. Meaning in this Braisa, who is the author of this Braisa? Is it Beit Shammai or Beis Hillel? And it doesn't say. Tosos does raise your question. Second Tosos on the Amud. It's not clear. And from the Braisa itself, it's not clear. If you look at the end of the Tosfos, he suggests Od Yesh Lamar, end of that second Tosfos. Od Yesh Lamar de Berushona de Hacha, meaning if you look at the Braisa we just read together, it opens up with the words Berushona. Hayne de Mitzchila hayu nohagin kebeis Hillel, uvesofit kinu lechule amashiyu nohagin kebeis Shammai. Interesting. Maybe they were knowing like Beis Shammai. Okay. That's true. So that's in the house. But any kli that's not in the house, so they would have to tovel because of this general takana. Okay. Haisha Shemesa. We're up to the next mission. We're 9 Aleph, Amud Aleph, halfway down the Amud. And a description now of a woman post-mortem and any blood that has emerged of her. So what is going to be the presumed status of that blood that came out of her? Now, this is going to be a tricky Mishnah, next one as well. But right now, let's try to simplify it as best as we can. The blood that comes out of a person post-mortem, so that's dam meis. What's the halacha regarding dam meis? If you have a revis of dam, a quarter log of blood that comes out of a person after he dies, so that blood is metame, b'maga, uve masa, uve ohel. So it's treated with all the stringencies of tumas meis. And a woman who, after she died, has now blood discharging out of her private area. So what status does that blood have? Well, there are two options. It could be dam nida, it could be dam meis. Now, obviously, it can only be dam nida if it came out before she died. It can only be dam meis if it came out after she died. So it really is a binary question. It really isn't, but it can't be both. Now, I say it can't be both, knowing full well that there will be an opinion coming up in the Mishnah that it's both. But if you really distill the issue, it really has to be a binary issue. Either it came out before, which means that it's nida, dam, or it came out afterwards, which means that it's dam meis. But it can't be both. Now, also, another point of consideration is as follows. If, in fact, it's nida blood, so how much nida blood is going to be metame? Well, we already discussed this earlier in the Masechta many times. And that is a kol shehu, any amount. And so, therefore, nida blood is going to be metame, any amount, a kol shehu. And if it's dam meis, it's metame only once you get to the point of revias. Okay. What? I think you're right. I'm not sure. I think you're right. So Aisha Shemesa v'yatsa mimena revias dam mitame mishum kesem umitame ba'olam. So a woman died and dam was coming out of her. And I'll say at this point in time, we're not sure when it came out. Did it come out before she died or did it come out after she died? But regardless, though, the Tanakhama of our Mishnah says it's mitame in one of two ways. It's mitame mishum kesem. Now, the word kesem over here used in the Mishnah, it's not the kesem that we discussed back in the 8th Perek, where we were talking about finding a stain on your clothing or on your body, and then having a status of a kesem, which is a need, where she now becomes a nida midirabanan. The word kesem over here used in this Mishnah just simply means it's dam nida. So on one hand, we're going to say it's dam nida, and also we're going to say it's metame ba'ohal. So the Tanakhama of the Mishnah says it's both. It's dam nida and it's dam ohal. If you look at Rashi, the first Rashi in the Mishnah, Matame Mishum Kesem, the Dam Nida Memashehu. The Mishum Tamasmeis Lamatame Ella Berevias. Okay. So a basic distinction to be made regarding Dam Nida and Dam Ohel, and we're saying that it's both. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Eino Matame Mishum Kesem Mimnesha Nekar Mishamesa. Now Rabbi Yehuda says it's not Dam Nida, meaning it was only Nekar, it only came out of her Makor after she died. And so therefore, It's not dam nida, it's only dam meis. Okay. Now, is he arguing with the reality? Is he in the Tanakhama, is Rabbi Huna in the Tanakhama arguing about when exactly this blood came out? It's kind of hard to say. Let me say it better. That's a difficult shot, to say that they're arguing about the reality. Generally speaking, we don't like to set up a machlokas that they're arguing over the realities. Everyone agrees to what the reality is, and it's just a question of how does the halacha fit in to this particular reality. So, and in fact, what I'm saying right now is not only most probably correct, But when we get to the Gemara is going to assume that it's correct, that this blood that came out of her post-mortem. Now, if that's true, so then what is the position of the Tanakhama? Meaning Rav Yehuda's position now makes a lot of sense. If we presume that this blood came out post-mortem, so it's dames, it's not damnida. So then what's the Tanakhama's viewpoint? So stay tuned because we're going to discuss that. Mode, just let me just first finish. Mode Rav Yehuda b'yoshev ha-samashber, umesav yafzim imena revias dam, shimatame mishum kesem. Now here's where Rav Yehuda will capitulate. If let's say before she died, she was yoshev ha-samashber, she was in delivery. Back in the day, and nowadays as well, but back in the day, it was more of a concern that when a woman was delivering, so it was a critical condition, and many women back in the day, so they died. So she died in childbirth. And as a result of that, Rabbi Huda will agree that here, the blood that comes out probably came out before she died, not after she died. And therefore, the blood is metame mishum kesem. So under normal circumstances, Rabbi Huda shita, actually very straightforward. Under normal circumstances, we're going to say that any blood that came out of her after she died. Unless she died in childbirth, we're there, we're going to assume that the flow of blood came out before she died. I'm Rav Yossi Leficha Chena Metam Eboel. So Rav Yossi says, well, as a result of that, so that blood's not going to be Metam Eboel. Now, it sounds like Rav Yehuda argues on that point. And it sounds like Rav Yehuda is going to suggest that it is going to be Metam Eboel. Now, if that's true, that also is very difficult. Meaning Rav Yossi seems to be making an extraordinarily reasonable point. If we assume that the woman in childbirth's blood started issuing before she died, so it's dam nida and it's not dam meis. And that's Rav Yossi's viewpoint. And what's Rav Yehuda saying? That it is considered dam meis and dam nida? Once again, now we're stuck at that position of, well, how could it be both? Okay, so there's a lot that needs to be clarified in the course of the Mishnah, and we're going to try. The Gemara is going to help us navigate through the Mishnah. Danny?
I'm assuming we're talking about young women here, this whole Mishnah. They say a woman dies, the age is not material here?
Well, no.
She's 70 years old, it's not done either.
Okay, I hear your point. The Mishnah does not make any kind of distinction. Mechlal de Tanakama Samar Afagav de Nekar Dam, Mishim Esa Matame Mishim Kesem. So, it sounds like the Tanakama is of the opinion that if the even though the blood came out after she died, it's metame mishum kesem. Meaning, as we already pointed out, according to the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, it's both. And it's really hard to argue both, meaning either it came out before she died or after she died. Now, there is a possibility, which we'll discuss in just a couple of minutes from now, in that, well, maybe a little bit came out before and a little bit came out afterwards. But we'll get to that. Right now, the Tanakhama's viewpoint is it's dam meis and it's dam nida. Well, how can it be both? It can be both. And again, like I said back in the Mishnah, but I'm just going to reiterate. And if we assume that the blood did in fact come out after she died, so then it's dam meis. And how are we entertaining the idea that it's also dam nida? So Amriziri Makor Makor Matama Ika Beinahu. So the Gemara says that what the issue is between the Tanakhama and Rav Yehuda is the issue that we've discussed numerous times in this Masechta, and that's the following. The uterus. The blood that comes out of a uterus makes her a nida. But is the uterus itself going to be an incubator of tumah? Blood passing through the uterus. Just by virtue of the fact that blood went through the uterus, is that blood now going to be an avatumah? And this is the machlokus of makor makor matame, the makor being the uterus. Does it make all blood going through it tame? And so the Tanakhama's viewpoint is yes. And therefore, the blood didn't need to leave the uterus until after she died. That part's true. But in other words, it was in her uterus before she died. And since the Tanakhama of our Mishnah subscribes to the viewpoint of Makor Makomo Tame, that means that according to the Tanakhama, it actually can be both. It is Dam Mameis because it came out of her after she died. But it's also Dam Kesem, it's also Dam Nida because it was in her Makor before she died. And so therefore, according to the Tanakhama, it's both. Now, on the other hand, Rav Yehuda does not subscribe to Makor Makomo Tame. Rav Yehuda's viewpoint is Makor Makomo Tahor. And so therefore, just because the blood was in the uterus before she died, that's immaterial. And so therefore, the only thing to take into consideration is when did it leave the uterus? And with the assumption that it left the uterus after she died, so therefore this is only dam meis, and it's not dam nida. Okay. So in the first machlokas of our mission between the Tanakhama and Rav Yehuda, we now have good pshat. How could it be both according to the Tanakhama? Because he subscribes to Makor Makom Matame. How can Rav Yehuda argue? Because he does not subscribe to Makor Makom Matame. Very good. Now we are up to the second part of the Mishnah. We're talking about the woman who has given birth. And the woman who has given birth and she dies in childbirth, so that blood that comes out of her, so Rav Yehuda in our Mishnah says, here I'm going to agree with the Chachamim, that that blood came out before she died. Now Rav Yossi said, and the to Rav Yehuda's point, okay, good. So if the blood came out before she died, so now that means that this is Dam Nida, and it's not Dames. Now when Rav Yossi makes that statement in the Mishnah, it sounds like Rav Yehuda argues on that point. And Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that the woman dying in childbirth, so the blood is going to be Dam Nida, and it's also going to be Dam Mace. And again, the question is very simple. How could it be both? Either the blood came out before she died, or came out after she died, and how could it be both? And that's the Gemara's question. So Mechlal de Tanakama, now the word Tanakama, as used by our Gemara over here, probably a reference to Rabbi Yehuda. If you look at the side of the Gemara, the Girsa is Mechlal de Rabbi Yehuda Savar, but either way. And it could very well be that Rabbi Yehuda on the woman giving birth is explaining or agreeing to the position of the Chachamim of our Mishnah, the Tanakama of our Mishnah. Anyway, there's a machlokus in the Mishnah between, let's right now say, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi regarding the woman who dies in childbirth, where Rabbi Yossi says it's only Dam Nida, and Rabbi Yehuda seemingly is entertaining the idea that it's Dam Nida and it's Dam Meis. How could that be? Savar Ba'ol, Nami Metame. Sounds like Rabbi Yehuda says it's not only Metame bin Ish, that blood is not only Tami Nida, it's also Tami Mishum Ohel, Mitum Mishum Meis. So I'm Rabbi Yehuda, so now, in explanation of this, Rabbi Yehuda, for not to get confused, Rabbi Yehuda the Amora is now going to explain what's the machlokas of our Mishnah. Dam Tavusa Ikabe Nahu. So what they're arguing about is the concept of Dam Tavusa. Dam Tavusa is blood where we are not sure if this is Dam Ames or it's not Dam Ames. What are examples of Dam Tavusa? So we're going to go through a whole assortment of examples. But before we get to all the examples given, so what's the basic point over here? The basic point, look at Rashi, Dam Tavusa Ikabe Nahu, L'Rav Yehuda Hol V'Safeku, Safik im nekar kula mechaim, safik im nekar miksas ala achamisa, hu dam tevusa. We don't know exactly when the blood came out, and now we're entertaining the idea that some came out before she died, some came out after she died. Again, she is right now in childbirth. So there is a very strong possibility that it came out both before and after she passed away. Now, this is what in halacha is referred to as a safek, and Rashi goes on, umidirabana metame ba'ohel. And so therefore, Dam Tavus is Metame Ba'ohel on a rabbinic level. Demidra writes, Adche Tehei Revius L'Acher Misa, because Min HaTorah, it only is Metame, a Revius is only Metame, if it comes out after she died. Rav Yossi Savra, Hailav Dam Tavusa Hu, Dekeven Dekaras Leilet Hu, Kula Neker Mechayim. Now, it's not the pshat, says Rashi, that Rav Yossi argues on the principle of Dam Tavusa. He agrees with the principle. Just the application in this case is what he's disagreeing to. In this case, she is in childbirth. She's now currently delivering right before she died. It is more than reasonable to argue, says Rav Yossi, that it's only Dam Nida and it's not Dam Eis. And this isn't even a suffix, because the likelihood is, because of circumstances, that the blood came out before she died, not after she died. Okay. The Gemara, Ezu Dam Tavusa. I'm sorry, Dam Tavusa, Gemara de Tanya. And now back to the Gemara. The Gemara is going to quote an assortment of Tanayim who are all going to give their viewpoint of what is a classic scenario of Dam Tavusa. Ezu Dam Tavusa Pireish Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Yehuda. So we start off with first with the Shita of Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Yehuda. Haruk Shiyatza B'menu Dam. Bein B'chai Bein B'mosa. So somebody who was murdered. And so when he was murdered, so obviously in the stabbing, some blood came out before he died, some blood came out after he died. Safik B'chai Safik Yatza. I'm sorry. Safik B'chai Yatza. Safik B'mosa Yatza. Safik b'chayiv uvemoso zeu dam tavusa. So we don't know. There are a lot of options. The blood came out before the murdered was died. The blood came out after. Some came out before. Some came out afterwards. So this now has the status of dam tavusa. And according to Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yehuda, this would be an example where this blood would be in a house under a roof midrabanan metame ba'ohel. Now the Chachamim say, no, this is not a Dam Tavusa where there's a rabbinic stringency. This is going to follow the very simple rules of Safik Tuma. Safik Tuma B'Rishos HaYachid, we're going to declare is Tameh. B'Rishos HaRabim, we're going to declare it's Tahor. This is based on the Halachas of Sota, as we discussed numerous times. But this is not a status, this is not a scenario, this is not the classic case of Dam Tavusa. Elo Ezu Dam Tavusa, so then what is the classic case? Haruk Shiyatza Emen Revias Dam B'chayev Uvamoso. V'adayin Lo Pasak. So let's say you have somebody who was Haruk, blood came out, bechayev uvamoso ve'adayin lo pasak, and it didn't stop coming out. Now that those three words of the shita of the chachamim, it's not perfectly clear exactly what that means. You see, Tosos, second to last one on the Amud, spends a lot of time struggling to give pshat over here. But for our purposes right now, I'm going to say a simple pshat. See Tosos for a lengthier discussion on this point. But right now, just as a simple pshat, we're just going to simply say that we saw blood coming out while he was alive, and we continue to see blood even come out after it was clear that the person was dead. So Suffik Ruba Bechayev Miyutu Memoso, Suffik Miyutu Bechayev Veruba Memoso. Now over here, we don't know what was Rov. Did the majority of that blood come out? And by the way, it's only a revius that came out. So we know that we have over here a full revius, and we don't know whether the majority of it came out before he died or the majority came out after he died. Zeu dam tavusa, according to the Chachamim, this would be an example of dam tavusa. And what is this? What's the critical feature over here that makes this different than the previous case? So you look at the bottom Rashi on the Amud. Harik shiatze dipshita lan delo nafik mine revius shleim al achar misa. So over here, we know that a full revius did not come out after the person died. We know that. And v'safik ruba mechayim rabusa ashmi'inan. And so Rashi points out over here, we're saying a chiddush. Afagav de misafka lan, iruba mechayim, even though we have a suffik. And we are right now, one of the possibilities that the majority came out before the person died. Gazer ala atoma. There is still cause to make a gzera over here. But Rashi just simply accentuates the fact that even if the majority of the blood came out after the person died, but it's only a revius in total, and you don't have the full revius coming out after the person died, and even if it's the majority, min ha-Torah, it's still not Tameh. The revius shlema demes be'inan. Rashi says, in order for a revius dam to be Tameh, you need a revius shlema. Majority is not enough. Umiyu yav epshitalan deruba mechaim lo gazer alaha. Now, if we knew for sure that the majority of it came out before the person died, so not even on a rabbinic level is a tameh, but because now it's a safek, so therefore, the chachamim made a gzera. But again, just to highlight Rashi's point, even if we know that it's not this entire revius came out after the person died, even though we know that the min haTorah, it is not going to be metameh ba'o. This is the example of dam tavus according to the chachamim. Rav Yossi Omer, Harik Shiatzem and Revius Dam Vayamuta Bamita. So Rav Yehuda illustrates the following scenario. Let's say it's very graphic. The person was killed. The person was killed in his bed, and blood now is dripping out from the remains onto the floor. V'damam mitaftef leguma, and the blood now is dripping out onto the floor. So tamim neisha atipa shalmesa murevis bal. So this pool of blood now that is under the murdered person who was killed in his bed, and even though it came drip by drip, according to Rav Yehuda, the pool of blood that's located on the floor is going to be considered dam meis. Now the chachamim etarim. Now the chachamim say that it's tahor. Mipnez, we turn now to the Amud Beis. Sherishon Rishon Nifsak. So the reason why the chachamim argue with Rav Yehuda is because with every drop that comes in, meaning we know for sure that the initial pooling of blood is coming from a live person. And so therefore, when you have a drop of blood now coming, even though that drop of blood is coming from a dead person, but as it is now hitting the pool of blood, so kama batel. With every drop that comes in, it becomes nisbatel in the pool of blood. And this is the idea, this is the principle of kama batel. We see it many times throughout halacha. We're usually discussing it in terms of Isser v'heter, and usser foods coming into other foods, and this idea of kama batal, and we discussed this idea back in Avodah Zarah as well. Over here, it's a really unusual application of this principle of kama batal, as we're applying it now to the world of Tuman Tahara, that when I have blood of post-mortem blood dripping in drop by drop into blood that was pre-death blood. So because it comes in one drop at a time, so it becomes batal. Now, if I continue with this titration of dripping one drop at a time, eventually what's going to happen is that the postmortem blood is going to represent the majority. Do we still say kama batal? The Gemara doesn't discuss that point. It is certainly an important point to discuss. We're not going to, but it's certainly worth contemplating. Well, one second. We're almost there. So, Shapi Kamerle Rabban Le Rav Yehuda. So, The Chachamim say to Rav Yehuda, or what the Chachamim say to Rav Yehuda seems to be very strong. And what Rav Yehuda Tamid Amar Ein Dam Mevatel Dam. Now the Gemara says good. So even though the Chachamim have a wonderful counter to Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda's counter to that is, I'm Rav Yehuda. I subscribe to the principle of min bimino in a bato. There's no bito when it comes to min bimino. And so therefore, you're right. You have your principle of kama kama bato, but at the same time, it's blood and blood. This is min bimino. And that's why I subscribe to the idea that there is no bito. Good. So that's the machlok between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim. Now, we are back to the Brisa, still giving illustrations of possible cases of dam tavusa. Rabbi Shimon Omer Tzalov Ala Eitz. Rabbi Shimon says someone is. Now the word Tzalov, we use that term usually to describe crucifixion. The word Tzalov over here probably does not mean crucified, but it probably means that he was hung on a tree. Regardless. Either way. So you have a person who, with his corpse, he was attached to a tree. So Tzalov Ala Eitz Adam Shosel La'aretz. And now the blood is dripping to the ground. V'nimsa tachtav revias dam. And underneath now, the remains of this person who was hung on the tree, so there's revias dam. So tameh. So according to the Tanakhama, that blood is tameh, Rabbi Yehuda mitahir. And Rabbi Yehuda says that blood is tahor. Shani omer tipa shomiso omer eslo al gavaitz. The blood that's on the floor, that's all blood that came out before the person died. Where is the blood, where's the post-mortem blood? It's probably dripping onto the tree. So, again, another machlokus over here in terms of what our assumptions are, what our presumptions are regarding the blood that's on the floor. Now, the Gemara says, now, within Rav Yehuda, we should be good and confused right now. Because previously, Rav Yehuda said that when the person's remains were in the bed and the blood's dripping down, so we assume that drops of post-mortem blood are dripping into that pool. And because he subscribes to the principle of min bimino in abatel, so therefore that pool of blood on the floor is going to be tameh, according to Rabbi Yehuda. And meanwhile, in the scenario of the tree, so Rabbi Yehuda just got done saying, oh, the blood that's on the floor, that was all blood that came out before he died. The blood post-mortem, that's still stuck on the tree, but it didn't come down. And what just happened? What's the difference between the person who died in bed, who was killed in bed, and the person who was hung on the tree? And Rav Yehuda, Neima Iu Lenafshe, that's the Gemara's question. Why doesn't Rav Yehuda have the following conversation with himself? And that is say, She'ani Omer, Tipa Shal Miso, Omer Es Agav Amita. So why don't we say that the Tipa Shal Mita, meaning the person who died in his bed, why don't we say that it was stuck on the bed, and the only blood that's on the floor is only the blood that came out before he died, just like the case of the tree. So Shani Bimita, Dimichalchala. So the Gemara says, well, it just happens to be a difference of circumstance. So in the bed itself, so the bed has got a lot of holes in it. Remember back then, what was a bed? It's not what it is now. So a bed was basically a bunch of ropes that were woven together in a frame, and have a good night. Okay, that was your night's sleep. And so the beds back then, it was a hammock. And so there's plenty of area for blood to come out from the corpse and to drip down onto the floor. Mashenkin, when it comes to the tree, so that when the person was hung or crucified on the tree, so most of the blood, says Rav Yehuda, is going to get stuck on the tree and it's not going to drip down to the floor. So that is the difference between the two cases. It's just a circumstantial difference. It's not a halachic difference. But that's why Rav Yehuda, in the case of the bed, says that the blood is going to hit the pool of blood on the floor. Mashenkin by the tree. Any post-mortem blood is going to remain on the tree. Okay. We're up to the next Mishnah. Okay. What is the theme for today in terms of Mishnayos? Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel arguing regarding Tumah and Tahara. Okay. By the way, we're in Seder Taharas, not to be understated. So it makes sense that we're going to be having a lot of Tumah and Tahara discussion, and today's daf is just going to be that kind of example. So we already discussed the machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel regarding the presumed state of a woman when she dies. Did she die as a nida, or did she not die as a nida? We're going to continue now in the Mishnah, discussing Tumah Tahara as it relates to Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, as it relates to a Yoledes. Okay, let's review. No. Not Mitame Ba'ol. Maga V'masa. Okay, let's do a quick preview of our Mishnah, a little introduction. A woman, after having given birth, so we discussed already numerous times on our Masechta, so she is going to experience what is Dam Tame, followed then by Dam Tahor. The Dam Tame and Dam Tahor, in terms of the length of days, it's going to depend on the gender of the child, the gender of the baby. The baby is a boy, so it's going to be 733, 7 days of Tumah, 33 days of Tahara. If it's a girl, it's 1466, 14 days of Tumah, 66 days of Tahara. Now, in terms of Tumah and Tahara concern, so let's try to make this clear. As vis-a-vis her relationship with her husband is concerned, so during the Yemei Tumah, she cannot be with her husband. At the conclusion of her Yemei Tumah, so she'll tovel in the mikvah that night. So let's say she had a boy. So 7 days she cannot be with her husband. On the eve of the 8th day, she tovels in the mikvah, and she can be with her husband. And, minatara, she could be with her husband for the next 33 days, regardless of whether she sees blood or she does not see blood. Now, on one hand, she could be with her husband, that's called Dam Tahor. On the other hand, she's not Tahora. Now, it's going to take a while for all of us to wrap our head around this idea. It's a funny idea, but this is this is what's called the Malos. From the time that she had the baby until the time that she brings Karbanos. Now, for a boy, it's going to be on the 41st day. After a girl, it's going to be on the 81st day. But up until that point in time, she is still going to be Tameya. Now, there are going to be degrees of Tumah. For the first 7 days after having a boy, she's Tamei to Tumah Yoledes. Now, when she goes to the mikvah and she goes back to her husband on the eve of the 8th day, she now, even though she can be with her husband, so to say that she is absolutely Tameya, obviously you can't say that. She's with her husband. On the other hand, she at this point in time cannot go into the Beis HaMikdash. Why? She's what in Halacha is referred to as a Tful Yom. Because she told them the mikvah, but she still needs Herev Shemesh. Now, this part's a little bit confusing, I admit, but this is the halacha. Generally speaking, to get from Tvul Yom to Herev Shemesh, it's very simple. You tovel during the day, and you wait till the sun sets. And now, you are finished with your Tvul Yom, and now you can go to the Beis HaMikdash. Unless you are a Zav Yoledes Mitzara, where there you also need to bring Karbanos as well, so your Tvul Yom is not complete. Okay, but generally speaking, for Tvul Yom, you tovel in the mikvah that day, doesn't matter when during the day, and you experience sunset, and now your Tvul Yom status is gone. When it comes to the Yoledes, it's an extended Tvul Yom. It's a Tvul Yom Aruch. It will go from the time that she tovels in the mikvah on the night of the 8th, and it will continue to go all the way till the evening of the 40th after a boy. Or the evening of the 41st day after a boy, the evening of the 81st day after a girl. So it's a really long period of being a Tvul Yom. 33 days or 66 days. Okay. That's a great question. Just wait. That's going to be discussed. Okay, so this idea now that she's a Tvul Yom. Now, when you are a Tvul Yom, so many times you've heard me say that you have residual Tumah. So you're not going to be Tameh as you were in the original state of being Tameh, but you are transitioning from being Tameh to being Tahor. And so therefore, during this Tvul Yom period, you have residual Tumah. What exactly can we put that into some sort of quantifiable amount of Tumah? So generally speaking, the way we describe it is a Sheni L'Tumah. It's a good way to describe it. It's slightly imprecise. For our purposes right now, well, let's say it. Let's say that the Tvul Yom is a Sheni L'Tumah. So that means that after having a boy, on the eve of the 8th day, where after she toveled in the mikvah, now for the next 33 days, she's going to be a Sheni. Again, a slightly imprecise, but it's a pretty decent way to say it. And then, when she gets to the eve of the 41st day, so now she is finished with her malos. She has experienced now Herev Shemesh. And now she's, on one hand, she's no longer Tvul Yom. On the other hand, she still needs to bring her Karbanos the next day. So her story of Tumah Tahara is not yet over. But anyway, that is a Tvul Yom. As a Tvul Yom. So what does that mean in terms of going into the Beis HaMikdash? She cannot go into the Beis HaMikdash. You can't go into the Azara. Midrabban, you can't go into Ezras Nashim. Okay, but that is the Tvul Yom can't go. Tvul Yom can't eat Karbanos. Okay. Tvul Yom still has residual Tumah. Okay. Now, what we're discussing is the following. A woman who is in a status of being a Tvul Yom Aruch. She now finished her 7 days of being Tameh. She went to the mikvah, and she started now her Tvul Yom Aruch sequence, going from day 8 to day 33. Sorry, from day 8 to day 40. So as a tul yom, so she can't eat carbon. What exactly can she do in terms of carbon Pesach preparation? Now, admittedly, by the way, the Mishnah here, just from my standpoint, is a little bit strange. Like, why would we want her doing any kind of carbon Pesach preparation? Kind of gives her the sense that she can eat the carbon Pesach, which right now she cannot. I admit that part's a little bit strange. However, she can do some sort of preparation. Now, she can't handle the carbon Pesach itself, obviously. Carbon Pesach is kachim, and she right now has residual tumah. So she can't handle the carbon Pesach itself. The Mishnah is going to be discussing what exactly she can do vis-a-vis carbon Pesach preparation. The woman who is during Dam Tahor, she's in the Tful Yom Aruch period. So what she can do is she can prepare the water to clean the carbon Pesach. Okay, and so she is, well, yeah, let's say it now. She can prepare the water. What does that mean, she can prepare the water? So the Mishnah's terminology is ma'arem mayim lepesach. She can pour the water. So that means to say that according to right now, this stage of the Mishnah, she can't touch the actual water itself, but she can handle the kli that's holding the water. Why? So as Rashi over here points out, I'm going to say it all outside. As Rashi here points out, because she is a tful yom, which means that she has the status of a sheni. Sheni is menat mitame adam v'kelim. Sheni is only going to be metame. If anything, it's only going to be metame ochlin or mashkin. And by the way, if it were chulin, even that will be totally unchanged by contact with the sheni. Okay, but right now, what the Mishnah is saying is that she can only handle the kli that the water is in, but it can't actually touch the water itself. That is what she can do while she's a tul yom. The Mishnah then goes on to say, Chazul Amar, Hareu Kamaga Tamimes, Lekachim, Kedivir Beisel, Bechame Ormim, Afke Tamimes. But then Chazul Amar, after further deliberation regarding the status of a woman who is a Tvul Yom, so what the Chachamim did is the Chachamim modified her status. In that, she is now going to be a Sheni, but only, sorry, she is going to be upgraded to a Rishon, but her status is only going to affect Kachim, and her status is not going to affect Chulin. Now, if you want to read that better in the Mishnah, I said it outside, and I said it clearly. But that's not the wording of the Mishnah. If you want to read that in the Mishnah, Chazulam Mahare Kumaga Tamei Meis. She's like someone who came into contact with a corpse. Now, the Meis himself is an Avi Avosatoma. The person touching the Meis is an Avatoma. The person touching that person is a Rishon Latoma. So she's going to have the Rishon status, but only as it relates to Kachim, but not to Chulin. So that means, and now Beis Shammai argues on this point, as the Mishnah says at the very end. Beis Shammai says that she is actually going to have the status of an Avatama, but we're not going to go like Beis Shammai, we're going to go like Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel says that she's a Rishon. So over here, on one hand, her Tuma got upgraded. Now, the word upgrade, by the way, is probably not the best way to say it, because it just means that she's more Tame. On the other hand, the scope of the Tumah is going to be significantly reduced, meaning according to the later institution regarding the Artful Yom, so she's not a Sheni, she's now a Rishon, but she's only going to affect Kachim, she's not going to affect Chulin. And what does that mean? So Rashi over here points out what that now means is that she can actually touch the water itself, meaning she's not limited to just holding the bowl to pour the water, but she can actually touch the water itself. Why? The water is mashkin. And isn't she going to be in the time of the mashkin? No. Because in this new way of instituting for Tvul Yom, her tumah status of Rishon is only going to affect Kachim. The water over here cleaning the Karban Pesach is not Kachim. Even though it's going to be used for Kachim, it'll facilitate, but it itself is not Kachim. And therefore the water is going to be unaffected when she touches it. The Gemara, everything we just said, give me a second. The Gemara now says everything that I just said. Let's see the Gemara inside. Ma'ara ein nogas lo. Now, in the first part of the Mishnah, she can only pour the water, but she can't touch the water. And so that means to say that we're treating the water like Kodesh. Ein masefa. On the other hand, go to the next part of the Mishnah. Chazulama hareyu kamagatame meis lekachim. L'kashin in l'chulin lo. But then the second part of the Mishnah, with the Chachamim no longer prevented her from touching the water itself. And that means that the water itself is not going to be treated like carbon. If the water is treated like carbon, so then she can't touch the water. By virtue of the fact that she's now able to touch the water, the end of the Mishnah tells us that it's chulin water, even though it's servicing a carbon. So masis and mani abishalhi. What happened? What's the difference between the first part of the Mishnah and the second part of the Mishnah? And the Gemara goes on to explain. Second part of the Mishnah, subscribing to Abishal. Detanya will enter the Brisa Abishal Omer, Tvil Yom Tchila Lakodos Latami Shnayim, Velifsol Echad. That when it comes to a Tvil Yom, Tchila Lakodesh, meaning, what is the status of a Tvil Yom? Vis a vis carbon, Tchila, meaning Rishon. So Rishon, so that. What's going to happen now is that for any carbon that's going to be touched by Tvil Yom, so that carbon now is going to be Sheni. Which in turn, if touching another carbon, is going to be Shlishi. Which in turn, if touching another carbon, is going to be Revi. Just to be familiar with the wording that's used in the Gemara over here. Tvil Yom Tchila Lekodesh, that means Rishon, for carbon. Letame Shnayim, and it can pass along two times over. Lifsal Echad, every time you're using the word Tumah, but you want to say it's the end of the road, so the word that you use is Pasul, not Tameh. So therefore, she is a Rishon Lagabe Kachim, so that which she touches is a Sheni, which in turn touches another carbon is a Shlishi, which in turn touches another is a Revi'i, but because that's it, in other words, by Karbanos, it doesn't go past the Revi'i, so therefore the word that's used is Pasul. Okay. Yes?
The fully Kachim, not Truma.
Right now we're just talking about Kachim. Truma's coming up. We're going to get to Truma in the next Mishnah. Okay? We start now with our last Mishnah of the morning. So, in terms of eating Meiser Sheni, so a Tvil Yom is allowed to eat Meiser Sheni. Meaning, again, there's residual Tuma, but that residual Tuma is not going to prevent her from eating Meiser Sheni. V'kotza l'chala. Now, question. How could she be mafresh chala? Okay, and this is going to be a bit tricky. Because she's a Tvil Yom. And a Tvil Yom is a Sheni. Or, as we learned in the previous Mishnah, legabe kachim, she's a Rishon. But let's call her a Sheni. I know it gets tricky because can't we just give her one label? And again, a Tvil Yom, the best way to say it is she has residual Tumah. How to quantify that obviously is open for discussion and debate. But for our purposes right now, she can't touch Truma. That we could say definitively. And if she touches Truma, the Truma is going to become Tameh. So how can she be Mafrish Challah? So on one hand, the dough that she's working with is going to be Chulin dough. But she has to separate Challah. You can't eat the dough until you separate Challah. But by her separating challah, she's going to come into contact with challah, and thereby being metame the challah. So what do you do? So that's what the Mishnah is going to give us, is the procedure in which she can be mafresh challah. The kotza l'challah, so what she's going to do is she's going to separate the challah, but don't call it challah yet. Umakefes. And what she's going to do is she's going to take the dough that she plans on calling challah, and she's going to put it proximate right next to the rest of the dough. The kotza l'shem. I'm sorry, the kora l'shem. And now she'll give it the status of challah. Now, right, a lot of details that are left on the Mishnah. Right now, that piece of dough that is going to become challah, it's got to be in something that's not mekabel tumah, otherwise she can't handle even the kli that it's on. Okay, but right now, there are a couple more details that are left out. But the point is that don't give it the shem challah until after it's separated, so now she doesn't have to handle it. V'im nafal meiroka midam tahara al kikar shel truma. She tahor. Now, if any of her spit, or if, let's say, a discharge of blood, dam tahor, that came onto the actual kikar shel truma, so that kikar shel truma is going to be tahor. Now, why? Isn't that a mayan? And on one hand, the answer is yes. On the other hand, remember, we're not talking about where she has her original tuma. We're talking now that she tovel in the mikvah, and she now is in the status of being a tvil yom. So we're talking really about mashkim of a tvil yom. Mashkim of a tvil yom is not going to be metame truma. And now, get to the question which Ben asked a couple minutes earlier. And that is, fine. Our Yoledes is a Tvil Yom. So after having a boy, on the eve of the eighth, she tovels in the mikvah. And now she goes through a 33-day period of being a Tvil Yom. Now you get to day 40, and so does she need to tovel in the mikvah again? Now, think about it in terms of a regular Tvil Yom. So a regular Tvil Yom, you tovel in the mikvah, and that night, you, after having experienced Erev Shemesh, you're Tahor. Do you have to go to the mikvah again? And the answer, of course, is no. You already went to the mikvah. The only reason why Harav Shemesh works is because you went to the mikvah. So normally for a Tvul Yom, you don't need to go to the mikvah again. And meanwhile, the question over here is, does she need to go to the mikvah again? So, machlok is between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel says that she doesn't need to go to the mikvah again after completing, and Beis Shammai says she does. We'll see why in just a moment. Quickly, we're going to run through the Gemara. Amar Tava Va'ala Ocha Ma'aser. So first, in terms of her being able to eat Ma'aser Sheni, it's a Mishnah. And our Mishnah subscribes to the Mishnah. The Mishnah over here is quoted as the Negaim. Fine. V'kotza l'chala chulana tava l'chala lafke chala dami. The Gemara makes another point, which I know we already made back in the Mishnah, but the Gemara spells it out. The idea that even though she's going to be separating challah, but and even though this dough has latent challah inside, but nevertheless, the dough currently does not have the status of challah, even though it is chulin, hatevulin l'challah, the dough does not have the status of challah, and that's why she can handle the dough. The idea that after separating the dough that she intends on calling challah, it has to be next to the other dough. So that is the halacha of litrom min amukav. V'kor l'ashem sakadach amina nigzor dama asei l'managaba me'avrai kamash malan. Now, the Gemara just simply points out what we could have thought as a gzera derabbanan. What's the havamina? It's very simple. In other words, even though she didn't touch the challah, but it's very simple that she could touch the challah. And so after it was given the shame challah, she could touch it. And so therefore the Chachamim would have banned her from even being mafresh challah in the manner that we described back in the Mishnah. The Chiddush is the Chachamim made no such ban.
She gives the shame challah by
Baruch. No, she calls it challah. She simply labels it as challah. V'im nafal miroka dina mashka tvul yom. Kim mashkin, I'm skipping the parentheses. Kim mashkin hanoga bahen. So the mashke v'tvul yom is going to have the same status of mashke that she actually touches. Ve'elu ve'elu einu matamim chutz mi mashke azav shu avatoma. And therefore it's not going to be matame. Meaning a tvul yom is a sheni. A tvul yom touches chulin. Even if it's all chulin mashke. Nothing. And so therefore the mashke that comes out of her body is going to have the same status. The only mashke that one needs to be concerned about is the mashke azav. Because that person is not in a state of residual toma. That person is in the original toma. And so therefore, the saliva that comes out of that person's mouth is an avatama, like we discussed earlier in the Masechta. Now, the difference between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel is Tvul Yom Arach, meaning, for a regular Tvul Yom, so there's no need to go to the mikvah again, because you went to the mikvah that day. But over here, it's been a while since you went to the mikvah, right? 33 days, sometimes 66 days. And so it's been a while. And so, the way Rashi describes it, one can make the argument that you have significant hesachadas, right? You've now distracted yourself from having gone to the mikvah. And so Beis Shammai says, because of that possibility of hesachadas, so that's why, even though you already told them the mikvah, and now you've experienced Erev Shemesh, but because it's a Tful Yom Aruch, so therefore you have to go to the mikvah again, according to Beis Shammai. And Beis Hillel presumably disagrees with that point. And Beis Hillel says that we're not worried about hesachadas, or maybe another way to say it is that hesachadas is just simply not an issue. However you want to say it, according to Beis Hillel, there's no need to go to the mikvah again. Let's recap. This morning we covered three basic issues. One, the Mishnah. First, we finished off our discussion about the presumed state of a woman before she died. Is she a nida? Is she not a nida? Machlok is Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. We subscribe like Beis Hillel. We do not assume that she's a nida unless we know for sure that she was. Blood coming out of a woman as she is dying. Is that dam nida? Is that dam mace? Is it maybe a combination of the both? So a lengthy discussion both in the Mishnah and the Gemara regarding what is the presumed state of that blood that's coming out of her. Is it dam nida or is it dam mace? Our second discussion is a tvul yom. A woman who's a yoledes experiencing a lengthy tvul yom period of 33 or 66 days. What is she exactly in terms of tumah tahara? So again, the best way to say it is residual tumah, but we want to quantify it. So how do we quantify it? So the Mishnah brought down various stages of the Chachamim. At one stage, she was at a stage of being a sheni l'tumah, but then the Chachamim gave her a step up in terms of tumah, making her a rishon, but at the same time limiting the scope of only affecting kachim, not chulin. The water that's going to be used to clean the carbon pesach, that's chulin water, even though it's facilitating a carbon, but still it's chulin water, and so therefore the water is not going to be affected by the tful yom. And finally, the last thing that we discussed this morning is first of all the allowance that she can eat Maaser Sheni while being in a state of being a Tevul Yom, and how is she separating Chala from her dough? So because if she touches the Chala itself, the Chala is going to become Tameh. So how does she separate the Chala from the dough? So the Mishnah gave us the procedure, and we learned a couple of principles along the way.